Today on Tim and Sid with Arash and Scott, Zach Kassian's kick has everyone talking.
The injury bug kicks the Leafs while they're down.
The NBA All-Star festivities kick off tonight.
And Man City are kicked out of the Champions League. It's a two-year ban.
Lots to get to, so kick back with us on the Friday edition of Tim and Sid with Arash and Scotty.
Hashtag Tim and Sid. Of course, I go by the name of the kid. Famous. Wow. This here is the Tim and Sid Show. You are now tuned in, coast to coast, entertaining the masses. Sports entertainment.
Yeah.
It's about to get started. Sit back, enjoy the show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
It's Tim and Sid for this 14th of February, 2020. A happy Valentine's Day to you and yours and everybody not named Kirk Cousins. That is Scott MacArthur. I'm Arash Madani. We are with you until 7 o'clock. The boys are actually working today, just not here.
I believe there's a commercial in the making.
Off-site shoot is what they've told me.
Mary Brown's.
Ooh.
Chicken's good.
Social channels remain the same. At Tim and Sid on Twitter is the best place to join in the conversation. We'll be with you on TV for the next 90 minutes. Full 2 hours on radio. Lots to discuss. Zach Kassian.
Zach Kassian.
Occupation.
We're finding out tomorrow, by the sounds of it, when this suspension is going to be levied and just how many games Zach Kassian is going to get, Arash. I'm not overly optimistic that I'm going to get the number I want, which would be 25, which is all remaining 25 Edmonton Oilers regular season games. I'm coming in at 12, but this is as serious an infraction, I think, as you can commit on the ice. This guy super kicked.
Yes.
He applied some Shawn Michaels sweet chin music to Chernak of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And claims, I was just trying to push off.
Yeah. We'll get to that in just a moment. Andreas Janssen, he is out for a little while. We'll get to the Astros, the Raptors, and Ryan Barucki. Again, with the elbow hurting.
Hurting, and he missed all but one start last year with that elbow injury. At what point does it become a concern that this guy's just never going to get right?
We'll check back in Dunedin to see what's happening with the Blue Jays starter. Joining us on the show today from Florida, ESPN's Marley Rivera. She was at the Astros news conference yesterday with the Yankees today. That should be a great conversation with Marley. You and I watched the Jim Crane press conference, the Astros owner. Watching that debacle, what struck you, man?
I'm sorry, not sorry. We live in a world today, Arash, where people will do anything, anything to win.
Yes.
They will cheat to win. And I don't know if it was the same 50 or 100 or 200 years ago. It just seems so prevalent now. I'll ask for forgiveness later, but I'll ask for forgiveness only after I've been caught. And this is an attempt, a contrived attempt to show some kind of remorse.
But was it? Was it he sat up there and he had an entire winter, the owner of this franchise, to show remorse? And I didn't sense him.
Well, you know what we come away with? Jeff Luhnow, the now fired general manager. This guy just dripped with insincerity.
Yes.
You now see that it comes to the top. I mean, Jim Crane, the owner of the Houston Astros, could not bring himself to show the contrition that we expected. But why would you expect Jim Crane or any member of the Houston Astros to show contrition? If you're doing this in 2017, you're not sorry about it in 2018, you're not sorry about it in 2019, and you're certainly not sorry about it in 2020. You're only sorry you got caught. He sat up there as a prop. Dusty Baker looked like a guy to me.
Yeah.
Who was like, well, I wasn't here, so I don't have to worry about this. But almost as if he was having second thoughts about what he got himself into here. I mean, this organization is absolutely reflective. I always say sports is reflective of the world.
Sure.
This organization is reflective of what too much of this world has become. Cheat, win, and then throw out a semi-apology a little bit later on. Until the Houston Astros, and it's not going to happen, but until the Houston Astros are stripped of their 2017 World Championship, I don't think Major League Baseball is going to be able to fully ensure that something like this doesn't happen again, because it's a constant cat and mouse game. Teams will always be trying to get ahead of the cat.
We're going to hear from the Los Angeles Dodgers a little later in the show. It was Cody Bellinger who came out hot about it. He said it was a joke. When he heard from the Astros yesterday, he said it was a joke that Rob Manfred gave those players immunity. He said that Altuve stole the 2017 MVP from Aaron Judge. Some big-time stuff coming out of the Los Angeles clubhouse. We'll get to that a little later in the show. We've also got Alvin Williams from NBA All-Star Weekend in Chicago, where it is frigid there. And Chris Johnston is going to join us on the Leafs' latest injury concern. And it's Friday, so we've got the best of the week. But we have to start with pucks. And one Zach Kassian, who is at it again. And you just have to wonder what this guy is thinking out there. Kicks Tampa's Eric Chernak last night. Blade to the chest. Now, discipline is coming from the NHL, likely gets handed down this weekend. Kassian waived his right to an in-person hearing, had a phone conversation this afternoon with the player safety folks. So now it's time to play Canada's fastest growing game show. Let's get to it.
How many games?
All right. How many games for that latest episode of Stupidity?
Are you asking me what I think he should get, or are you asking me what I think he will get?
The floor is yours.
Okay. He should get the rest of the regular season, which would be 25 games. I think he's going to get 12. So because it's an in-person hearing, the rights to which he has waived, he's getting at least six. I think he'll get 12 for this. This will account for almost $300,000 of his $2 million salary this year. This is going to be costly, Arash, because Zach Kassian, and I can't believe we're saying this in 2020, Zach Kassian is a crucial component of the Edmonton Oilers offense on a team that doesn't have a lot of depth and on a team that's missing Connor McDavid for at least another couple of weeks still with a squad injury. I mean, this is going to hurt them.
Okay, so let's get to the discipline for one. That happens February 13th. Exactly 1 month prior, this dude gets a two-game suspension for roughing. And that wasn't his first one. Guys, if we can run this board, it's amazing over the years, and you think back to what Kassian did in junior. You go back 10 years ago, he got 20 games for a hit to the head. He's been suspended for intent to injure. He's been suspended for abuse of an official. And, of course, the high sticking in September of 2013. And when it happened in junior, both at the CHL level and the World Juniors, he didn't back down from it then. And last night, when he was asked about it, he didn't even seem to think it was a big deal either. This is Zach Kassian last night after basically karate chopping a kid to the chest with his skate blade.
I think I just tried to reactionary, try to get him off me, kick him off me. Just try to get my foot loose.
Did you feel like you kicked him? Like it looked like it might have hit him there. I don't know if it did or not.
Like kicked him?
Yes.
No, if I kicked him hard, I think he would have flew back.
So the video does show that you kind of cock your leg and go, but you don't feel that was your intention.
I know. I was just trying to pull my leg out of the thing and then just get up and get moving.
I just tried to pull my leg out of the thing and get up and get moving.
And he's lucky he didn't graze his teammate who was underneath him. If you were watching on TV and saw that video. I mean, this is, as I mentioned earlier, Arash, this is sweet chin music, Shawn Michaels style. I mean, this is a super kick to the chest of Chernak. And if that skate blade, and look, we can sit here and say what could have happened. If that skate blade, there you're seeing some sweet chin music from Shawn Michaels right now. If that skate blade runs up Chernak's jersey and clips him in the neck, what are we talking about then? And you could say, well, that's almost physically impossible given where Kassian was on the ice. If that happens, we're dealing with a player who's in severe, severe trouble here. This can't happen. The league has to take a stand on this. Guy like Chris Simon, how many years ago now? 12?
Yeah.
December of 2007, got 30 games for a stomp. Like a month later,
Chris Pronger
on Ryan Kesler in a Ducks-Canucks game got 8 games. I don't understand the disparity there. Probably player reputation. Chris Pronger was a star in the game at the time. But Zach Kassian has a repeat offender history. He was suspended about a month ago, 2 games, as you alluded to, for the Tkachuk thing. he's going to have to pay a significant price here. I'd like to see him get the rest of the regular season, although I think it'll be about 12.
Oilers have 25 games left. They are second in the Pacific right now. And you just wonder when the light is going to come on for Zach Cassian, or will it?
It won't at this point. Arash, how old is he? About 30 years old. I mean, you are who you are.
And this is what I wonder. I wonder if the Edmonton Oilers do not condone this, of course. But the Edmonton Oilers, in the aftermath of the two-game suspension for roughing last month, gave Cassian an extension. This grit and sandpaper way of the way the hockey folks talk about this kind of behavior, to me, while the game has gone away from it, I still believe that those in hockey crave it, that those in management want that on their team.
You think it's across the board?
I really believe that.
You think even in Toronto? You think a Kyle Dubas-led team?
A little less.
Or do you think the acquisition of Kyle Clifford? What? And I think that had a lot to do with the need for a backup goaltender.
Sure.
Right? I mean, Freddie Anderson gets hurt. You can't have Michael Hutchinson playing potentially as many 5-6 consecutive games in a row because you don't know exactly where Anderson's head and neck is going to be at. You have to go and address that. But you get Kyle Clifford. Is that Kyle Dubas reacting to hockey culture? Or is that Kyle Dubas evolving as a general manager, realizing that you have to have a mix of players on your team? I mean, I don't think that the Clifford type is Kyle Dubas's preferred type of player.
And yet he went out and got him.
But he went out and got him because I think he was hearing the noise and he was watching his team play. It can't possibly be that anybody, even in the Edmonton Oilers organization, would stand up and say that what Zach Cassian did in last night's game was okay.
Of course not.
But at the same time, you like these types of players.
They want guys like that around.
The guys who play with edge, the guys who will protect star players, and we know the Oilers have two of them, McDavid when he's healthy, Leon Draisaitl as well, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is a skill guy, not a star, but a skill guy. Zach Cassian and his type, if you can score goals, fight the odd fight and play on that edge, you still have value in this game. I go back to Sean Thornton with the Boston Bruins. It's those types of fourth liners who still have a spot. It's the true fighters who can't skate, who have no hands. They're the ones who've been washed from the game, but the Cassian types, I think they'll live in this game forever.
It's expected that this weekend the discipline will come down for Zach Cassian. You can vote now, sportsnet.ca/vote. Those of you watching on television, you see the poll question at the bottom of your screen. It's interesting looking at that a quarter of our viewers say there should be no suspension. Half our viewers say 15 or more. I mean, hockey right now feels like it's at a crossroads culturally because there you see it. Half of the folks are saying, no, that's unacceptable. And yet 25% are saying, hey, there's nothing wrong with what Cassian did.
And you could throw up a similar poll for the Zdeno Chara-Brendan Gallagher incident
right.
In Boston where Zdeno Chara cross-checked Gallagher in the throat. And Chara's what, 42, 43 years old? He's been in the league for the better part of 20 years. He knows exactly what he's doing, but he comes away with a $5,000 fine. Now, keep in mind that Brendan Gallagher's a guy who's had a concussion this year.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's been out with injury. And Chara, they always give him the height thing, right? Well, this guy's 7 feet tall on skates. I mean, he cross-checks a guy in the chest. It's going to run him in the neck because he's so much taller than everybody else. That's as dangerous a play.
And Zdeno Chara knows better. Zdeno Chara, and that's exactly what Brendan Gallagher is telling
him right there. He's caught up in the moment, Arash. He's caught up in the moment. Your stick, your skates, especially those skates, though.
Nah,
weapons and dangerous.
We'll wait to find out, Zach Cassian. Those are metal blades on his feet.
And sharp metal blades.
This would be, I believe, the 7th or 8th career suspension for Cassian going back to junior when this comes down. Meanwhile, the Maple Leafs welcome back Freddie Anderson last night. It had been a while, but he gave up goals early in each period. First shot of the period, not Anderson's friend. Toronto loses 3-2, but Andreas Janssen left the game with an injury, surgery needed, out a minimum of 8 weeks. So just when you thought the trade deadline couldn't become any more interesting, 10 days away from it, here we are with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
First of all, start Jack Campbell in Ottawa tomorrow night and come back with Freddie in Buffalo on Sunday. Because you got back-to-backs against two bad teams. You got to win both. You've got Andreas Janssen's cap hit available now. He's on long-term injured reserve. He's not coming back.
$3.4 million
on the cap hit. He's not coming back this season. You've got Morgan Riley, who, by all reports coming out today after his checkup, is going to be back before the end of the regular season. So you cannot take his cap hit and apply it to an acquisition. What do you do with Cody Ceci if any potential trade acquisition comes in at more than $3.4 million? I think Kyle Dubas has to upgrade this team, Arash. I think this Maple Leafs team, look, it's not the end of the world for Dubas if they don't make the playoffs, in the sense that I don't think he's going to lose his job. But this roster is constructed, and it, by God, is paid to win now. The pressure is on here to improve this team so that it gets into the playoffs. They've got to address that right side D. He's got to take this LTIR money, and he's got to use it.
If Morgan Riley is not available and 24 games remain for the Maple Leafs, who are clinging to a spot in the dance, if Morgan Riley suffers a setback, or if Morgan Riley's not available until the playoffs, how different is the trade deadline for them? I just wonder if the Leafs were at comfortable cruising altitude right now, if they are in.
You're not freaking out.
Not only are you not freaking out, but do you then sit Riley? Do you do what Chicago did with Patrick Kane a couple of years back? Sit him. Sit him through the balance of the regular season so you have the cap space, first now with Janssen, then with Riley, to go then upgrade at the deadline to beef up your team for the playoffs.
Well, and a lot of ifs
in that conversation.
Well, a lot of ifs in the conversation, but how many games are we talking about with Morgan Riley? They've got to know at the deadline, effectively, as close to his approximate return as possible. Because, Arash, if it's just two games, if it's just three games, if it's the final weekend, then maybe you do take his cap hit and you effectively take it to acquire more players. You've got Janssen on LTIR. You've got Riley. You can get a pretty big haul if you're able to divest yourself, if you're able to find a trading partner who's going to take what you have left to offer. Because their prospect capital, it hasn't been rated fully, but it isn't anywhere near what it used to be. And they also don't have their first-round pick, remember, because Patrick Marleau, that's what it took to get him into Carolina very briefly. I think what you do here is it comes down to Cody Ceci. That's a high ankle sprain. That's a fluctuating potential return date. The 3.4 of Janssen, the 5 mil of Ceci. You got $8.4 million to work with, and if you can get a defenseman or a couple of players who improve your team such that you are better with them than with Ceci, you shelve Ceci for the rest of the regular season.
Yeah.
Because Janssen's hurt, I think Riley's more or less out of the equation now. I think it's Ceci that's in question here.
And Cody Ceci, look, that's a big cap number at this stage of things. Yes, the contract is prorated. We know that.
He's not coming back, too.
And with 20 games roughly by next Monday, by a week from Monday, this is going to be a race to see who gets into the playoffs. It is going to be tight. Let's get to Dunedin. Let's get to the Blue Jays. Some bad news coming out of spring today. Ryan Barucki shut down with left elbow tightness. You may remember he only made a couple of starts last year. He had surgery in August to remove bone spurs. Barucki was likely in the conversation, I would think, for the fifth spot in the rotation. But this is a young arm that the franchise was banking on, that was hopeful about, and now he has been shut down. Barucki says, look, I still want to be in the mix. I still feel like I'm going to be a starter. But this is concerning.
Well, it's not just what happened last year. There is a Tommy John in his distant history.
Yeah.
Right? And so at what point does he become a candidate for potentially a second Tommy John surgery? We don't know that at this point. The fact that the elbow's barking and it's mid-February tells you that he probably wasn't feeling right for at least part of the offseason. Advantage Trent Thornton.
He's the next man up?
Well, I'm looking. It's Ryu, Rourke, Shoemaker, and Anderson, right?
Right.
So who's the five? Trent Thornton was, what, effectively the only Blue Jays starter last year.
Correct.
To make every start. He probably would have been Buffalo's ace in a perfect world. He made the team out of camp due to injury and underperformance. He stayed the entire season. There's Weggis back. I think there's Nate Pearson down the road. Yamaguchi is a guy that I think they prefer in the bullpen, but may get a sniff. I mean, he's done the bulk of his work in Japan the last couple of years pitching in relief. So it's Thornton, it's Yamaguchi. If Trent Thornton has a good camp, I'd pencil him in. Pencil him in as the fifth starter.
Coming out of camp.
Coming out of camp. Well, wow. because you got... Or is Yamaguchi in your rotation and Thornton's in your bullpen?
I think they're very cautious and slow with Nate Pearson. Nate Pearson is going to be on an innings limit. Let's remember he had that injury in the forearm last year. It wasn't ligament related. It was a line drive that went off of it. He's not going to be able to throw 200 innings.
No, because
this year.
He's only hit 100 innings once his pro career. But what I do think, Arash, and there may be a fluctuating timeline on this. If this team plays good enough baseball into June and July that it can convince itself that it is in wild card contention, maybe you do bring him up late June or just before the All-Star break. We are going to see, all things being equal, injuries aside, we are going to see Nate Pearson as a Toronto Blue Jay this year, and he will slide in with Hyunjin Ryu at the top of that rotation when he does arrive.
Hyunjin Ryu is the man now, Pearson down the road, and we will keep the baseball talk going as we head down to spring training and catch up with ESPN's Marley Rivera. More on the Astros cheating scandal, including some explosive comments out of Dodgers camp today. That's all coming up next on Tim and Sid with Arash and Scott. Welcome back to Tim and Sid, Arash Madani and Scott MacArthur with you on your Friday, your Valentine's Day Friday, the day after the Houston Astros made a further disgrace of themselves. Their owner, Jim Crane, came out and was absurd. And today, across baseball, a lot of players had a lot to say. This is Trevor Bauer, now with Cincinnati, saying, quote, "We don't think it affected the game. You're either lying or you're a bleeping idiot, and you don't become a billionaire owner of a team by being a bleeping idiot. So you're lying." I think that's pretty clear.
Trevor Bauer's having a pretty good week. He's explaining to us why baseball's losing a generation of fans, and he's hitting the nail on the head right here. I mean, as we said off the top of the show, if you're doing this in 2017, you're not remorseful for it in 18 and 19 before you get caught. And you're only saying sorry because you got caught in 2020. But until they strip the Houston Astros of the 2017 World Championship,
which
Jim
won't.
Crane said it yesterday, Arash. He said it yesterday, blah, 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 for 27 minutes. We won the World Series, so we'll leave it at that. You think he cares about a $5 million fine? You think he cares about first and second round draft picks coughed up in 2020 and 2021 when he's got his world championship? $5 million fine for him is like fining you 5 cents, right? Doesn't mean a thing to him. You can get prospects back. They're not going to be able to pay all their star players. You can get prospects back in trades that could offset the draft picks you lose and, in fact, even advance the program because those prospects are closer to the big leagues than some of the draft picks you may select. There are ways around this. The Houston Astros have the 2017 World Championship. They've got their rings. It'll be some weird 10-year, 20-year, and 25-year reunions, Mike Fiers, at Minute Maid Park. But they've got their World Championship, and until you take that away from them, why do they have any reason to care?
Well, it was in 2017 they beat the Dodgers, of course. And Cody Bellinger, who usually is pretty bland and doesn't have much to say, not the case this afternoon at spring.
I thought the apologies were whatever. I thought Jim Crane's was weak. I thought Manfred's punishment was weak, giving him immunity. I mean, these guys were cheating for 3 years. You know, I think what people don't realize is Altuve stole an MVP from Judge in 17. Everyone knows they stole the ring from us.
They messed with a lot of guys' lives. Somebody will take it into their own hands and they'll get suspended more games than any of those guys got for the biggest cheating scandal in 100 years, you know? So it'll be pretty ironic when that happens because I'm sure that's how it'll end up playing out.
That last voice you heard, Alex Wood, a pitcher for L.A., basically saying, we're coming and we're going to throw at them. Marley Rivera was tossing up some hard balls at Jim Crane yesterday. She joins us from ESPN. She's down there in Florida. Marley, as you're sitting there watching that whole thing unfold, what could you possibly have been thinking, my friend?
Well, I think the number one thing is I was surprised. Jim Crane has always been nothing but forthcoming and elegant and kind. And for the record, I spent a lot of time with him when he dealt with Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria. He sent his own private plane with supplies. And I was just kind of confused. And the only thing that I can think of, and this is pure speculation from my part, is that it was legalese. There wasn't any point where the owner of the Houston Astros, if he admitted that the sign stealing directly affected competition, then you are opening up to all those lawsuits that we're going to see out there. So that's the only thing I can think of. But it was baffling. I'll use that.
You're talking about the Bolsinger lawsuit and anything else that may come.
Anything else that may come up, yeah.
Marley, I mean, we know that Major League Baseball has levied its punishment, and we are still awaiting the punishment of the 2018 Boston Red Sox. But I do want to circle back, and you've been very vocal about this on Twitter. Carlos Beltran, is he the mastermind of all of this, as some reports have suggested? Such a veteran voice in the clubhouse that the younger players and even manager A.J. Hinch didn't want to go near him, didn't want to challenge him. Was he the mastermind of all this, or is he the retired player?
He's the scapegoat.
Who's the martyr, the scapegoat for all of this?
I obviously don't know the answer to that, but it obviously is suspect, right? A couple of people, and actually Brian Cashman said it today, it doesn't really pass the smell test of the Carlos Beltran that we know. Now, let's be very specific. The word mastermind and those things were not said in some of the reporting, but the word godfather and steamrolling were, which immediately led a lot of players, like you said, Carlos Correa, to immediately say, we were not steamrolled. No one made us do anything. I mean, Yuli Gurriel directly said, no one put a gun to my head. We make choices and we have to own them. So I think that that's what's important here. The fact that these players didn't point fingers. And as awful as that press conference was, I give full credit to every single member, an active member in the Houston Astros of the 2017 team, because Arash and Scott, you both know that not every player stands there for 45 minutes to an hour and just takes every single question. So at least they stood up there. But then, you know, everything was messed up by that presser.
Yeah, they wore it. They owned it. But yeah, the owner's the one. Now, Alex Cora, Marley, there have been some reports that perhaps it wasn't as extensive in Boston when Cora went to the Red Sox when they won the World Championship in 2018. We haven't seen baseball make their investigation. I don't know if it's complete. They haven't made it public yet. Are you getting any sense of what kind of discipline is down the road for Cora, who, of course, parted ways with Boston a couple of weeks ago?
I really don't. I mean, one of those things, it's a very, very hush-hush thing, right? We've been hearing a lot of versions that maybe it's going to happen, you know, in the next couple of weeks, certainly before the end of February. But the problem with Cora, and at this point, is that it's become so overblown, right? Because we're just all waiting and waiting. And it's going to be hard for Major League Baseball to give Alex Cora, without any proof and without telling us the results of the investigation, specifically what they found in more detail, to give him more than they did to A.J. Hinch or Jeff Luhnow. I mean, otherwise, at that point, Alex Cora is going to say, I mean, the quote-unquote executives who were in charge, I mean, this is A.J. Hinch's team, right? This is the team that Jeff Luhnow put together. This is the team that Jim Crane owns. And if Alex Cora ends up being the fall guy and taking more than, you know, that 1 year suspension, which is exactly what A.J. Hinch and Jeff Luhnow got, it's going to be complicated unless there are some extra findings in the Red Sox. I've spoken to a few executives and some people at Major League Baseball, and right now is exactly what you guys mentioned. They haven't really found much. I mean, at least not as extensive as we saw with the Astros.
All right, Marley. So you know me well enough to know that I'm a cynic, right? I'm a cynic?
No.
Or sometimes I'm a realist. One or the other. I'll let you be the judge here. So this is a stain on baseball, correct?
I think
we agree.
Yes.
But how about a little player-on-player hate? How about the potential for a little player-on-player crime? You've got Alex Wood of the Los Angeles Dodgers suggesting that somebody's going to throw at somebody and that could happen a lot this year. You've got Cody Bellinger saying Altuve stole an MVP from Aaron Judge in 2017. There is a really important collective bargaining agreement negotiation, negotiation coming up here between the league and its players' union over the next season plus. I don't think baseball is at all bothered by the notion of unrest between players, because it's benefited from that before.
All I have to say is that the players' union and all their members were fully galvanized after what's happened in the last 2 years in the quote-unquote, and I'm just using the word collusion, even though it hasn't been proven, you know, the quote-unquote collusion of the owners to really not, you know, not hire many players, not sign them. And they were all very excited about this, you know, getting something out of this collective bargaining agreement. And now there's just a chasm between them. This is going to be just so hard to repair. And it's not only, but the one part is, Scott, that I sort of disagree in the quote-unquote, you know, joy that Major League Baseball may have in the rift is that this is sort of the biggest nightmare, because what Cody Bellinger said about the fact that Jose Altuve, he says, that stole the MVP from Aaron Judge, then you're questioning everything. You're questioning every award. And that's just really not a positive for Major League Baseball. It wasn't only Jose Altuve, right? There's a lot of results all season. So in that sense, I really don't think that Major League Baseball, pardon me, is going to be happy about that. Now, the players are no longer galvanized. To get these players together in one common goal is going to be very, very hard.
That's the voice of Marley Rivera of ESPN. She is our MLB insider on Tim and Sid. Arash Madani, Scott MacArthur in for the guys. I wonder if the next memo from Rob Manfred's office is not about the lack of technology. It's not about shut up and don't talk about the Astros. It's, hey, teams, stop throwing at the ear hole of Houston hitters. I wonder how long it's going to take before baseball and the commissioner's office may even intervene in that.
There's going to be some clear warnings immediate. This isn't something that actually teams have already sort of been warned about. Okay, you can sound off, you know, do this. Actually, not warn, recommendations that, okay, from now on, can we just move on? And it is something that I know specifically that the players at the Yankees have been recommended. Like, of course, say what you think, but then later on, just focus on the future and focus right now on your team. But the warnings are going to be very clear, Ash and Scott. You know that. This isn't going to be no joke. The first time there is a little chin music, That is going to be right there. It's going to be interesting how the umpires handle it. And, of course, it's going to be very interesting how Major League Baseball handles it, especially from the operations side. And you know there's going to be a memo. There's going to be a memo of we will not tolerate, right? This. And let me remind players, as much as you think that the Astros, that the Astros cheated and they broke the rules, it also is against the rules to just beat up guys, right, with fastballs. It is.
Well, it is, Marley. And look, it's one thing to say something in an emotional moment. We know that these pitchers, for the most part, I mean, Rick Ankiel and a few others have been examples to the contrary, but for the most part, these pitchers can put the baseball where they want to.
Yes.
And if somebody is throwing at the meat of a guy's ass cheek, that's one thing. If somebody's riding one up shoulder level up toward the neck, there's going to be a moment of very quick and long-term regret if he pins a guy and concusses him, or even worse. So you got to sort of set your emotions aside if you're a pitcher for an opposing team.
Well, not only that, and at the end of the day, I find beating players ridiculous, because it affects your team. It actually doesn't affect them in any way, except if you really hurt them, right? But you're only hurting the player personally. It makes no sense. You're actually putting a runner on base. So I agree with you guys. It's going to be really, really frowned upon, quote unquote, and it's going to be very careful. But I mean, it's going to happen. And I do expect some major, directives from Major League Baseball towards all baseball players. And you know what? To go out there and simply say that, like, be careful the next time you come to my ballpark. And not only that, the Dodgers also have to be very careful. The Dodgers blew some games at home that the bullpen blew. So I don't know that I agree entirely with Cody Bellinger's assessment of, oh, no, you stole a World Series from us, because the Dodgers lost a Game 7 at Dodger Stadium. So let's just be very clear that, fair is fair. It doesn't mean that the Astros deserve to have won the World Series, but there's no way we can know that. And that is what I really wish that Jim Crane has said yesterday, that he had said, we cheated, we broke the rules, but I believe that we still would have won the World Series because we had talent. But the difference is that we'll never know. They won it by cheating.
Yeah. Marley, we have 30 seconds. You're at Yankees camp today. Is there even a point of playing the 2020 season, or are they just going to win the World Series?
Well, after watching Cole's bullpen today and talking to Gary Sanchez after, I said, Gary had that Cole look, and he goes, did you see the guy who pitched in the playoffs? That's how he looks. So I think that that banner is going to be high up there, especially after the changes that the Boston Red Sox are going to do. But you know, the Tampa Bay Rays are going to have something to say about that. And Charlie Montoya and the Blue Jays and the Baltimore Orioles are going to have to wait a little bit longer.
Marley, as always, appreciate it. Great to see you. We'll be seeing you down in Florida pretty soon.
Thank you, guys. And this was the best Valentine's Day present for me.
She lies.
Yeah, she lies. You make us blush, Rivera.
I lie so well.
All right. Have a great night, Marley Rivera. Thank you. One of our absolute favorites. One of the best. One of the best in the entire baseball beat.
Yeah, and I mean, I like what she had to say about Beltran there. He retired, so it's easy, right? He retired, so it's easy to scapegoat the guy who's never going to play another game. Turns out he's never going to, quite potentially, never manage another game without ever having managed one in the first place.
I wonder if this now gets him out. Is Cooperstown closed on Carlos Beltran because of this?
Well, see, here's the thing with that, Arash. He had such an illustrious career. I'd lean toward putting him in without the final 2 or 3 years of his career when this, you know, was happening. Or it was, I guess, the final year of his career, right? He was
and it's the year of his career he got the ring.
He got the ring. I still think he's a Hall of Famer. I think there's a debate to be had there, but I would put him in. What I'm wondering is, can Jose Altuve play long enough? Alex Bregman certainly can play long enough. Can he do enough to repair his image? Will time erase our memories or dwindle them enough that those guys, who absolutely are Hall of Fame caliber baseball players, if they go on to have long and successful careers to the extent that they already have, will they be the ones who are compromised in all of this in terms of their Hall chances?
Yeah, I think regardless of what happens, if they continue to put the numbers up, it's amazing how sports fans, their memories can be so selective.
A-Rod,
it can be short, sure.
Manny Ramirez, Barry Bonds.
I mean, Tom Brady was suspended 4 games for Deflategate. Regardless of where you stand on it, that was a suspension, but nobody talks about it.
Except it was just deflating footballs. It was just deflating footballs, which in the scheme of things, after what we've been dealing with in baseball with PEDs and now the sign-stealing stuff, the use of technology seems,
and garbage cans,
to me, relatively minor. What?
And garbage cans.
And garbage cans.
And garbage cans.
High technology.
Coming up, it's the best and the worst of the past 7 days. We'll call it the best of the week. Stick around. It's Tim and Sid with Scott and Arash on your Friday. Welcome back to Tim and Sid with Arash Madani, Scott MacArthur. It is time for the best of the week, brought to you by Mary Brown's Crave Delicious. We will present you with some of our favorite audio and video from the past 7 days, and you can vote for your favorite at sportsnet.ca/vote. We'll announce the winner a little later in the show, and what a week it has been. Kendrick Perkins, what did you have to say about Kyrie Irving, huh?
Chance right now.
Yeah.
Let's go Celtics. And Kyrie Irving didn't want to play for this franchise. Time I think of that guy want to throw him.
That's gold. That's absolute gold, isn't it?
Perk is just bringing it. He doesn't care anymore. And it is absolutely beautiful. But Kyrie Irving, I mean, this guy's got some stuff going on, so always try to be careful. But he wanted to be the man in Cleveland, and so he forced his way out before LeBron's exit. Boston doesn't miss him at all. You think Kendrick Perkins is the first person to have an opinion on that? That's also come out of that Boston locker room. And now the Brooklyn Nets are just waiting for KD to be healthy next year. And what a scene that'll be.
Yeah, a couple
Katie,
of
Katie, who's not at all sensitive, and Kyrie Irving, who can destroy a locker room.
Hey, Kemba Walker or Kyrie Irving? I'm taking Kemba any day of the week. When we went to our production meeting this morning, Scott MacArthur said, I'm a huge Justin Bieber fan, so this is what we found when Bieber and Jimmy Fallon, well, it was Bieber trying to teach Fallon how to skate.
Love the stash.
You all dressed up? Ready to go?
Yeah. Actually, I'm not kidding. I have to go to the bathroom. I really do.
I'm going to show you how to do a simple backhand shot.
Why don't we do backhand shots and backhanded compliments, okay?
Sure. Why not? Have you lost weight? You look a lot better than the last time I seen you.
I really like your mustache. I love that it's not quite skeevy.
The authentic part of that is Fallon actually likes the Rangers and he likes hockey.
He does. Biebs, I had no idea about this. I knew he was a Leaf fan. He'd been to some games and all this. If you watch that clip further, Bieber is doing laps, right?
He can skate.
Blue line to blue line, goal line to goal line, stop, start. He's a hockey player. You can tell he played a little bit growing up. Jimmy Fallon, on the other hand?
Not so much.
He's American.
The Oscars were last Sunday. Best moment of the show. We know Parasite cleaned up. They won a bunch of the awards. So their director, Bong Joon-ho, after getting up on stage to be presented with yet another Academy Award, said this is how he's going to celebrate.
I'm ready to drink tonight. So. Until next morning. Thank you.
Bong Joon-ho speaks for us all.
Hollywood on a Sunday night. 7 seconds or less. Mike D'Antoni, Steve Nash made that thing fly in Phoenix about 10 years ago, and they recently sat down, Steve Nash asking his old coach a couple of questions.
All right, it's time for the truth. If you had to pick one player to run your system, who would it be?
That's easy. James Nash.
You're such a liar.
It's James Nash. I'll take a little bit of both of them.
The consummate fence sitting.
The consummate
James
fence sitting.
James Nash. Steve Harden.
He'll take
either.
I take Steve Nash.
I take Steve Nash any day, but of course, I'm Canadian, so I'm going to side with our guy.
Yeah, no question about it. Your guy is also Vernon Davis. You're a 49ers guy. And Vernon is apparently now an actor, which he wanted to show off some of his skills on ESPN this week.
You were telling us that you're actually getting ready to be in a movie. Tell us about that project.
Yes, Red Winter. I partnered with a buddy of mine, and we, through Real 85 Productions, Smoot Films, we're doing a movie called Red Winter, which will take place in Denver. We'll be shooting for about 3 weeks, and I'm getting geared up for that.
Give me a line real quick. Let me set you up for one of your lines. Like, what should I say to you to set you up? I want to see this.
Gosh, you put me on the spot, man. One of my lines from what? Just the movie?
The movie, yeah. I want to see that. I want to see you in
character. You want to see me in character?
Yeah, give me something, Vernon.
It takes a lot, but I can,
Oh, well, we checked in with his former coach, and this is what he had to say about that acting performance.
Cannot play with him. Cannot win with him. Cannot coach with him. Can't do it. I want winners.
That face of Vernon Davis has been the face and the emotional state of most San Francisco 49ers fans, not for the last week and a half, but for most, not all, but most of the last 20 years.
Final word to the fun guy.
There it is. Kawhi, what are you doing here?
I'm blocking you from overpaying.
Well, finding deals is hard.
Nah, acting in a commercial is hard. Saving money is easy. Just use Honey. Let me show you. Just click and save.
Thanks, Kawhi.
This laptop is tiny.
It's normal size.
Oh, that laugh. You can vote now at sportsnet.ca/vote for the best of the week. We'll tell you all about it coming up a little later in the show. After the break, we go to Chicago. NBA All-Star Weekend is underway there. Alvin Williams. We'll talk a little bit about the Raps, their surprising first half,
and a lot more. That's next on Tim and Sid with Arash and Scott.
It's time for real sports talk with Tim McCallum and Sid Sexsero.
Thank you, sheepdogs. Welcome back to Tim and Sid with no McAuliffe, no Sexsero. I am Arash Madani, along with my good friend Scott MacArthur. We'll be with you for another 30 minutes on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 360, full hour on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And we haven't done this in years, have we? Ottawa days?
Sharing a microphone together?
Yeah.
Well, every now and then we're on the writer's block roundtable with Blair and Brunder, Blair and Deitch. On Sportsnet 590 stuff. Do a little Blue Jays stuff, but you know, we haven't done this since our Ottawa days, and I'll say, you know, you got the broad shoulders, you've been carrying me.
Is that what's
been
going on?
Making me feel at home? Yeah. Thanks, pal.
Oh, yeah, good to see you, man. It's been, you know, we've been wondering today where the dudes are who host this show. No surprise. Sid Sexsero just tweeted this, breaking news. Sid is stuffing his face with Mary Brown's fried chicken. Fitting that my love affair with at Mary Brown's continues on Valentine's Day. Hashtag crave delicious. Hashtag partner.
And McAuliffe looking miffed.
Yes.
Right beside him.
That's where the fellas are. They'll be back. They'll be back next week. NBA All-Star Weekend underway in Chicago. You can catch all of Friday and Saturday night's events right here at Sportsnet, starting at 7 o'clock Eastern Time. The Rising Stars Challenge headlines tonight's events, and Canada will be well represented. Four dudes from Canada on the world team roster. You got Nikhil, you got Shea, you got RJ, Brandon Clark with the Grizzlies from Vancouver. A little fitting. And they had a chance to speak a little earlier today.
It goes by so fast. It feels like last year I was in high school playing with my cousin. But yeah, you cherish those moments. But in this league, in the situation I'm in, you got to move forward and think about the future and worry about the present.
Did you think it would actually be a reality one day where the two of you are here as pros together, let alone sharing this weekend?
Yes and no. Because you go through like dark times in a tunnel where you're like, what's the point? Is there ever going to be some light? But we've dreamed of this, and we always kind of talked it into existence.
It's great. Yeah, I got Shea and Nikhil. We've been boys for a while, and you know, we got Brandon Clark here too. So it's great just to especially have friendly faces in here.
I would say very, very special. Also really big for our country. So just really grateful to, you know, be able to play with them and rep our country because, you know, basketball is getting bigger and bigger there. So just really cool that, you know, the kids back at home will, you know, be able to watch us and see that.
Four Canadians playing tonight in the Future Stars games. Man, it's, yes, Tokyo is going to be exciting and Victoria and what's happening in June with the final qualifier. But especially when you think of the 2024 Olympics, what Team Canada can be is going to be ridiculous.
Well, and I think, Arash, this is just the springboard, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk about the question marks surrounding 2020. They've got to qualify still. You mentioned 2024, but then there's 28, and then there's 32. And specific to Toronto, I think it's fair to say more broadly across the country, but specific to Toronto, we have such a wonderfully diverse city. We got a ton of kids, both male and female, playing basketball, who are 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. 10, 15, 20 years from now, these kids are going to be adults. I think we're paving the way here for success and perpetuity. I mean, I think that basketball's growth in this country and in this city over the last 10, 15, 20 years has been something to behold. What are we going to be talking about when you and I are celebrating our 60th birthdays,
yeah,
20 years from now? I think the foundation has been laid for something special long term here.
And one of the guys who laid the foundation with the Raptors joins us now from Chicago. The last time I saw him was on the court at Oracle when the Raps lifted the Larry O.B. Alvin Williams only shows up for the big time events because he is big time. Great to see you again, my man. When you think of where Canada basketball
Yeah. What do you make of all these young kids and what's going on with Canadian basketball right now, Alvin?
I mean, it's great to see. You know, anytime you can see the development and you just see the progression of anything, especially these young players, you know, I think back when I first got to Toronto and I'm going across the street and I see people with big bags and ice skates, and I was like in foreign land. I didn't know what was going on. It was rare you would see kids outside playing. You would go to recreation centers. Not many kids were in there playing. But now you see the development. And it's always like anything else, you know. You put the time in, you get exposure, you get opportunity, and you put the work in, you're gonna see some results. And that's what you're seeing right now, especially this weekend.
Vince feels a bit of a badge of honor with this. He loves seeing these young Canadian kids getting into the NBA now. What does it mean to you as one of the early Raptors who had some success with this franchise?
Well, I got news for Vince. Got a chance to interview Shea and Nikhil. They don't even remember him, man. They said we were too young to remember anything he did. So he's an old man, and I'm old too. So, but no, you think of, but they did give him his props, you know. It was one of those things where Vince definitely laid a foundation to bring popularity to this sport in this country, right? So you got to give Vince a lot of credit, but you got to continue giving the fans credit to stick with the team through the ups and downs. And then overall, the whole foundation, the organization, you know, keep developing. The players that are here now, these are the players now that just took everything that Vince started. And players before that, Damon Stoudemire, Marcus Cambys, all these guys who are here also putting the work in. But now you look at the organization and you look what they're doing. Now you're tasting winning. So the pride is even stronger. So definitely you give Vince's props. But as I mentioned, these young guys, I think Vince and the rest of us are fading out quickly.
Yeah, I was going to say, Alvin, okay, you say they don't remember Vince that well. Did they remember you? Be real.
Oh, heck. Yeah, they remember me after the interview. Not before.
Yeah, after you introduced yourself. Alvin Williams joins us. He's at the All-Star game in Chicago. Okay, so the last time I saw you, you're interviewing Kawhi, and then Kawhi goes to the Clippers. If I said to you, 55 games in at the All-Star break, the Raptors would have 40 wins, what would you have said about this season?
I wouldn't believe it. You know, and it's a shame for me to say that because I knew how critical having someone like Kawhi on that team was. And, you know, you just don't know from season to season, especially all the injuries that this team has suffered, right? And it's just the way they stayed the course, you know. But you can't discredit, and that's the biggest thing. You have current players and you have existing players from a roster. They get better in the summertime. You know, they hear the whispers. They have something to prove, and that's what happened. You know, the players have got better. They have the chemistry, the coaching staff. They still have the belief in the players, and the players have belief in the coaching staff. So all of those things together, mixed with just pure talent and a great coaching style, a great game plan, this is where this team is today, with or without a Kawhi Leonard.
The Raptors, the hottest team in the NBA coming into the break, winning 9 of their last 10. Of course, their 14-game win streak came to an end.
And Elvin, of course, Nick Nurse is
15, sorry,
representing the Eastern Conference, and he'll coach team Giannis in the All-Star game this weekend. Not bad for a guy who was overseas and coaching in places like England, not exactly a basketball mecca, 10, 11, 12 years ago. NBA championship in his rookie season as a coach, 40 wins in 55 games to start his second season as an NBA head coach. What is it about him, whether it is schematically, from a personality perspective, a combination of both or more, that impresses you the most about the Raptors head coach?
Well, I never spent more than 2 minutes with Nick Nurse, and I've never been in the locker room. I haven't heard a game plan, but what I do see, he has the players playing. You know, you feel a sense that they believe in what he has to say. They believe in his approach. They believe in his preparation. So that's half the battle right there. When you get a team and you get a locker room that will buy in and that will try to do anything that the coach will say, That's half the battle once again. And that's what Nick Nurse, to me, have shown. You know, he has the experience. No matter if you're in England coaching or you're here in Chicago coaching at an All-Star game, you still have the experience as a coach. And those things don't go anywhere. Coaching in the NBA and professional sports is a lot of times management. And if you can manage the personalities, the egos, and everything that comes along with it, then you got one hand up. And I think Nick Nurse is doing a great job with that. And, of course, he has some great talent around him. He has some veteran leaders that also will help him when the times get a little rough. Sometimes as a coach, you want to lead on those veteran guys that can ease the locker room a little bit, get everybody staying on course. And Nick Nurse has done a great job by using that to his advantage.
Alvin, when you think about where this team is going now, Marc Gasol at some point is going to come back from the hamstring, and Norm Powell is going to return, you would think, down the stretch of the regular season. When they finally get healthy, have you thought about what this team is capable of in the playoffs?
You know what? I haven't, because they've been playing so well. But to your point, that's the biggest thing. I think if they can just stay healthy, then it could be lights out. Of course, you have Milwaukee, and they're playing at a very high level, no doubt about it. They have experience from last year. And if they meet Toronto again in the postseason, you know, they're going to have a chip on their shoulder. But Toronto Raptors is a team. They have every element. They have ball movement. They have defense. They have camaraderie. They have experience, right? And they have players that can go get their own shot. And they're not shy or bashful at all. So I think the Raptors are made up of have a pedigree of just winning. And we're seeing that over and over. Over the past, Toronto have had great regular seasons, right? This past season, we saw them go all the way to the end. Now the belief is there that it's just not a regular season team. This is a postseason team that's ready to perform and ready to play lights out as they did last year. And I think, once again, with a Kawhi Leonard, this is a dangerous team.
With Elvin Williams. Elvin, I think this is kind of the way any sports fan approaches their favorite sports team or sports teams, which is, well, what's the worst case scenario? What's something I can worry about when there really doesn't seem to be anything to fear? Let's presume that Toronto and Milwaukee are destined for a repeat matchup in the Eastern Conference Final. There's no more Kawhi Leonard. How do you approach that Milwaukee Bucks team? How do you shut down Giannis, or do you worry less about that and try to take away all of the Bucks' alternatives?
Well, I think the Raptors did a good job making adjustments game 3 and 4 last year, you know, and going the rest of the way after they dropped the first two in Milwaukee. And it was pretty much you play Giannis straight up and you just form the wall behind them and try to make them finish over top of you and just let them see bodies. And the only thing about that was Giannis didn't do a bad job to me. He was still finding players. The other players weren't hitting. You know, the Bledsoes and the Middletons and, you know, Lopez, they had good games early on. But as the series progressed, those guys faded out, right? So I think that was the biggest key for Milwaukee. And they didn't make many adjustments after that. For the Raptors, defensively, I think they have that model. Now, you may have to make adjustments because Giannis is shooting the three ball a little more. I'm not sure if that's much of a threat, but you still have to keep those other players in check because Giannis, we know what he can do. We know the impact he has on the game. But if you have those other players, you keep them in check. I think Toronto Raptors are still in good shape to have a game plan to slow Milwaukee offense down.
Alvin, you mentioned buy-in and Nick Nurse. I've wondered a lot of this, that, you know, we often hear about how coaches lose a locker room. How does a coach get buy-in from his guys? And then how does a coach lose a locker room, and what does that mean?
I think, you know, a coach gets guys to buy in different ways, but, you know, it's personality. If players see a coach and they're grinding in there and night in and night out, and he's communicating, and, you know, he starts seeing some success. You want to, especially as a young coach or a newer coach, people want to see success right away. And I think that's what happened with the Raptors. Of course, they showed success right away. Regular season was really good, and they won a championship. So now you have someone like Nick Nurse. We saw him do a triangle in two or a box in one, and mm-hmm. I've seen him full court press, things that are absolute no-no in the NBA game. But you see that team, the Raptors, get back in games, win games, doing things like that. That's the first indicator when you see those things working for a team and working for a coach. And if a coach can easily flip the tables, you know, he can lose a locker room by doing certain things, testing certain things out without the buy-in of the team or without the communication or without just, you know, showing that hard work day in and day out in the locker room or on the court or in his office. Things like that can happen where a coach or a player can just tune out. But you got to, once again, give credit to the veteran guys, the Kyle Lowrys, the Marc Gasols, the Serge Ibakas. These guys are the ones, when players are starting to doubt a little bit, those are the guys that can keep the team on course and make sure that they stay in unison and keep moving forward to the ultimate goal, which is a championship again.
Elvin, you live in Philadelphia. You're familiar with that 76ers team and what's going on there. They're doing the dance with Miami and Indiana right now in that 4-5-6 part of the Eastern Conference playoff bracket. They go into the All-Star break on a 3-game winning streak. They sit fifth as we talk right now in the conference, yet you've got cryptic but not so cryptic Instagram and social media posts from Joel Embiid saying live long enough and you'll go from hero to the villain, hashtag trust the process, etc., etc. What is going on in and around that 76ers team? And if this season doesn't end the way that they're hoping it does, whatever that is, I would imagine at the very least it involves some kind of a playoff run of consequence. What do you think happens there?
You know, it's difficult. I'm not there at all, but, you know, and it wouldn't be fair to talk about the locker room, but I what I see from the outside is exactly what the Raptors have. You know, they don't have the leadership. I think their best two players, and Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, aren't quite mature enough to take that next step. And when I say the next step, I mean a championship run. You know, you got to, a lot of times, if you're the best player or you're one of the best players, you got to step outside of yourself. And you got to put the team first. Of course, you got to perform, and you got to do what you have to do. You have to set example, you know, by performing. But you also got to put that locker room and them teammates in front, because they're going to look to you, and you got to empower them. And it's less about you. So when you see Instagram posts from Joel Embiid or you see things happen, that's more of an individualized thing. And sometimes that's cancerous in a locker room. That's cancerous in a team, no matter how good he is. But it's going to take the whole team to make sure they're together in order for them to win. And if they don't perform at the highest level that they think they should with the expectation, then you never know. This is the NBA. The coaches could be gone. Front office could be gone. A player could be traded. You just never know. But I know one thing. That team has a lot of talent, and I think that team has enough talent to compete for a championship. It's just about putting all those pieces together. And I think what they need is surround themselves with a little bit more leadership in that locker room, so Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, they can just go out and continue to get better and perform the best of their capabilities for that team to win.
So more leadership, bringing in a vet, would do what for them, Elvin?
I think you got to bring in the right vet, right? I think you got to bring in a vet that's still very productive, and it's the person that can relate to these guys. You know, you look at a Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler is an in-your-face guy. And for me, it seemed like he and Joel Embiid, they really connected well. Joel Embiid, I know one thing. He wants to be great. He want to be a great player. He want to do the things so he can be mentioned with the tops. He's just not mature enough to understand what that takes. And I think he needs someone to push him along, show him the ropes, and understand that. To me, Ben Simmons is more mature from that standpoint, but he's more of a standoffish guy. He's not a quite leader from a verbal standpoint and taking the reins by putting other people in position to lead them. So you got two different dynamics. And I think someone like a Jimmy Butler was a guy that could bring that leadership, but he's also a guy, he's going to test the coaching staff. He's going to test the front office. He's going to test certain players. And if you're not ready for that type of personality in your organization, then I think you see what happens. Someone like Jimmy Butler gets the short end of the stick with that, and he has to find another place to play.
Elvin Williams joining us on Tim and Sid. You got a weekend in Chicago. Tough gig. What's going on tonight and tomorrow, man?
First of all, it's freezing here. It's never been colder a day in my life. And I think back to the All-Star game in Toronto when everyone thought that, you know, that weather was going to deter players from wanting to go to Toronto. But look, after that, you get Kawhi Leonard, you win a championship, so the weather has no bearing. But if I never have to come back here at this time of the year again, I will never come back here ever again. It's 17 degrees here, man. I don't know what that is Celsius, but it's 17 degrees Fahrenheit here. It's cold, man.
Looking very slick in his black turtleneck, Elvin Williams. Always good to visit with you, my man.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, Elvin Williams from the All-Star game in Chicago. He's the best. Working the NBA Finals with him for 2 weeks was an absolute treat.
some off the record stories.
And not just stories, it was a lot of, and that's what I wanted to get to in the conversation. What's it like in a locker room in this scenario, in that situation, when things are going off the rails, or if a player is just out of control ego-wise? And he would relate it with some stories and kind of what was going on. It just gives you such a perspective of what day in and day out in a pro sports locker room and an NBA locker room can be.
Yeah, and he was a guard on some of the first very good to great Toronto Raptors teams.
Sure.
I love that start of our conversation where he didn't want to give Vince full ownership.
Yes.
Full ownership over what we've got going on in the country now. He was a part of it too.
One of the real neat moments too of the finals last year, it was before game 6 in Oakland. The day before was a media day at Oracle. And in comes, we have a little room in the arena, and the NBA arranges sit-down interviews. And it's Kyle Lowry and Steph Curry. Now, little old Sportsnet in Canada gets Steph Curry and Kyle Lowry for sit-down interviews. And the way those guys looked at Alvin, talked to Alvin. Steph, when his dad was here, Alvin would stay after practice and shoot with him. Kyle looked up to Alvin when he was at Villanova in Philly.
Yeah.
And the quality of content, the answers, the eye contact, just how engaged those guys were talking to our dude AW was awesome.
Well, this is a big weekend. Big weekend for the country with the four Canadian kids in the Rising Star game. And bright, bright basketball future, bright present. Because we're in a point here now, Arash. Defending NBA champions, 15-game win streak, 40-15 are the Raptors heading into the break. Things have never been better with that franchise.
Best of the Week winner on the other side here on Tim and Sid. Welcome back to Tim and Sid with Arash Madani and Scott MacArthur. The guys will be back next week. It's time to reveal the Best of the Week winner, and it's brought to you by Mary Brown's Crave Delicious. To no surprise, all of you wanted to remember the fun guy.
Ah, there it is. Kawhi, what are you doing here?
I'm blocking you from overpaying.
Well, finding deals is hard.
Nah, acting in a commercial is hard. Saving money is easy. Just use Honey. Let me show you. Just click and save.
Thanks, Kawhi.
This laptop is tiny.
It's normal size.
Is Kawhi Leonard an honorary Canadian?
Yeah, but I feel like we're never going to get the laugh.
Yeah.
The very same way we got it when it was organic that first time.
Right.
It's being forced now.
Become a trademark.
I don't really mean it.
Right. I don't know if you meant it the first time around either.
But it was dead honest.
I'm a fun guy.
Which is about the worst imitation ever. I probably should have kept that one in the holster.
I'm trying to remember the last time an American athlete in Canada had the kind of impact that Kawhi Leonard did coast to coast. And Josh Donaldson won the MVP in 2015, but they didn't get out of the ALCS. Is it Roy Halladay? But I don't even think it's
but
the
again,
same.
It's playoff
win.
It's playoff success,
right?
The thing that will always stay with me about Kawhi Leonard's brief tenure here in Toronto, the way that it was capped, was that the Toronto Raptors took on his personality from about Game 3 onward in the Milwaukee series through the NBA Finals. Arash, we are conditioned as Toronto sports fans, as sports fans in general, to expect the worst.
Yeah.
Even when the Raptors had their backs against the wall in that series against the Golden State Warriors, there was a confidence, at least I had it, that they were going to pull it out. And it's because whenever their backs were against the wall, they never panicked. They took on Kawhi Leonard's personality.
He's a mean SOB. I mean, when it was all on the line over and over, and you remember the shot against Philadelphia in Game 7, but even before that, the shot before the shot, Game 3 in Philly, the way he took over Game 3 against Milwaukee, and then in the finals. It's funny. You still think of Kawhi a little bit as a Raptor, even though he isn't here, and the fun guy just continues to be ever-present.
He becomes almost a mythical figure because it sucks that he's gone.
Yeah.
But he becomes almost a mythical figure in this city and in this country because of what they accomplished in such a brief period of time here.
Time to say goodbye to those of you watching on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 360. Hockey Central is up next on Sportsnet, and then it is NBA All-Star Friday night. WWE Aftermath is coming up on Sportsnet 360. Meanwhile, Tim and Sid with Arash and Scott will continue on Sportsnet 590 The Fan in just a minute's time. Enjoy the pucks with Carolyn and Natalie Spooner. We'll be back on the radio right after this. Welcome back to Tim and Sid here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Arash Madani, Scott MacArthur with you until the top of the clock. We thank Alvin Williams for joining us from the NBA All-Star Game. A crazy day, busy day in sports. Look, the Zach Kassian thing was ridiculous. He's going to be suspended this weekend. The expectation is it's going to be double-digit games. We'll see how many 25 games remain in the schedule. Bruce Boudreau fired by the Minnesota Wild. Boudreau was in his fourth season there in Minnesota, making the playoffs in two of his first 3 years. They are 3 points back of a wild card in the West. Speaking with pucks, Chris Johnston joins us. CJ, welcome to the show, my man. What does it mean with another injury to a big cap hit for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, there's a few things here. I mean, it kind of continues a season for the Leafs that's had its challenges with injuries. You know, that does happen from time to time, but certainly this organization hasn't faced that the last couple years. And, you know, I do think it creates some possibilities for them that they can explore still with, you know, 9-10 days till the trade deadline, that, you know, with Andreas Johnsson now being done for the rest of the regular season at minimum, you know, his cap hit can be used to potentially acquire a player. Now, it's a funny year because Toronto, such of the talk around the Leafs heading into the season was that they were going to have cap troubles all year. They might even face a scenario where they can't even dress a full lineup because of their cap issues, but because they've had a constant stream of injuries and never at a point with an entirely healthy roster, they've really had no cap troubles at all. And so, I think Kyle Dubas and his management team have a week to explore the market and maybe bring in a short-term rental, someone making some money, because they now have more cap space than they would have had Johnsson not been injured.
CJ, what's the very latest? I believe Morgan Riley had an appointment today. Is there any update on his status and when the Maple Leafs, I know we're ballparking here because it's still a little bit of a ways away, but when the Maple Leafs can expect him back?
Well, there's actually some good news on Riley, because he broke the bone in the arch of his foot, and as a result of that, he hasn't been able to put any weight on it since that injury happened. He's been going around with a little mini scooter, keeping his foot and his leg elevated. And he's got to a point here now where he's been given permission here in the next few days to start putting a little bit of weight on his foot. Obviously, that'll eventually lead to him being able to skate. And what it means for the Leafs is they still have him projected to come back at some point, mid to maybe late March. And so, I don't think we would put Morgan Riley most likely among the guys that they're going to hold out for the rest of the regular season and to use his cap space. I would think, given some of the encouraging news he's received from the doctor and the permission he's been given to kind of move to the next stage of his rehabilitation, that, you know, he's a player they're going to want in the lineup, even if it ends up being 5 or 6 games at the end of the regular season. And so, I would be surprised, based on the latest development, if he was done for the regular season. And also, I don't think we'll see the Leafs make a move that accounts for his cap space, because they're probably going to need to activate him.
CJ, and I know there's a lot of ifs in this conversation. If this was a team comfortably in the playoffs right now, would you have foreseen a situation where Kyle Dubas would have told Morgan Riley, hey, take an extra week or so, we'll preserve your cap space, and we'll try and go out and get better and kind of do the Patrick Kane thing that Chicago did a few years back?
I think it would certainly be in his mind more. You know, at this point, the Leafs' blue line, I mean, the last few games here, they've played Rasmus Sandin and Timothy Liljegren, by far the youngest defensive pairing in the league. In fact, those are two of the 10 youngest defensemen in the NHL this season. So, that's a situation where there's going to be some ups and downs. And I think, given that they're in a tight race, they don't want to have to be in a position where they're doing that. And You know, one way to accomplish that, of course, is when Morgan Riley returns. You're right, Arash. I mean, had they put another 10 points in the bank to this point in the year, if they had more of a cushion, I think a lot of this would be approached differently. Not that at all that I think they're rushing them back, but I think that the way that this, you know, the opportunity would look is much like Chicago looked at it back in 2015 with Kane, where they kept Patrick Kane out maybe a little bit longer. They certainly ruled out the possibility of him returning in the regular season by making some moves at the deadline. And in that case, everyone remembers it so well because it worked. And that team won the Stanley Cup with, you know, some of the players they brought in, including Antoine Vermette at that trade deadline. And Patrick Kane returned for game one of the playoffs and had a great playoff. So, you know, I do think it's a different situation because there's no guarantee the Leafs are getting to game one of the playoffs. I mean, they're holding down a spot as we're talking right now, but there's a lot of teams bunched up. And I think as a result, they have to operate where they want to be in the best position to win every game they can down the stretch.
With Chris Johnston of Sportsnet, NHL Insider. Chris, I'm trying to, I know it's all projection, but I'm trying to figure out in my head just how interestingly weird this could get between now and probably closer to the trade deadline. Janssen's $3.4 million and is on LTIR. He's lost for the rest of the regular season. You got Cody Ceci, who we haven't talked so much about yet in this conversation, as a $5 million cap hit. He's got a high ankle sprain, so it's quite possible that he may not be able to return because that's such a wonky injury between now and the end of the regular season. The Leafs could be playing with even more cap space if you factor the Ceci number in there. But you combine that scenario with the prospect capital that they do have, and you don't just want to continue to deplete the system to acquire guys who might be on short-term contracts in order to save the next couple of months. Factoring all of that in, the fact the Leafs don't have their first-round draft pick, could you see Kyle Dubas swinging a blockbuster here that takes somebody off of the roster in order to add a piece or two to the roster?
I think it's possible. You know, it's probably not likely at this point, Scott, because the other part of this Janssen injury is that, you know, the Leafs, in my opinion, their biggest card they had potentially to play going into this deadline was dealing from one of their middle-class forwards, I'll call them. You know, that group that includes Andreas Janssen, Kasperi Kapanen, maybe Alex Kerfoot, to try to use, you know, a chip like that, a young player on a pretty fair deal, you know, manageable contract, to get a defenseman maybe with some term back. And you know, I think that the picture looks a little different, not just because obviously they're not trading Janssen now, but they don't have quite the depth of that position they did entering in. You know, what they've likely ended up here with, though, is, you know, I don't have a clear view on exactly what's going on with Cody Ceci. I'm not sure if he's done for the regular season, but if he is, and if you factor in Andreas Janssen, and if you factor in Ilya Mikheyev, of course, who is done for the regular season, and that they probably have about $2 million more than that, give or take. You know, they probably have as much as $11 million that they could bring in at the deadline. But where they would probably bring that in now, and I don't know they would have done this before, is on an expiring contract. You know, I think that might make the most sense for them. You know, this might shape up now where they have to get in the rental market. You know, typically the acquisition cost for those type of players isn't quite as high, but you know, they now have the ability to at least consider a group of guys that I don't think they would have targeted had this series of injuries not come about in the last week or two. And so, you know, this is a pretty on-the-ball management group. I think that they will understand where their opportunities are, and there are opportunities in this. Obviously, they don't want injuries, but they are a fact of the game. And you know, I think that what they have really is a short-term window here to maybe add a player or two that's on an expiring contract. And you know, then it'll just come down if the acquisition costs, and then they can make it happen.
With Chris Johnston, what are you hearing on the likelihood of Jake Muzzin signing a contract extension in the not-too-distant future?
It feels pretty, you know, it feels pretty locked up. You know, I think that there's been a really good fit here for Jake Muzzin in Toronto. You know, last year was a little bit tough adjusting to a new team after so long in L.A., a place where he was comfortable, but you know, I think he's really come to like it. They've come to like him. I think he understands their circumstances vis-a-vis the salary cap and long-term commitments. And I do believe they've made some progress there in the contract talks. You know, the one thing I would say, and without going too deep into cap minutiae, is that there's rules called tagging rules about how much money you can have on your cap for next year in the current moment. And The short form version of that is you get more of that money once you get on the other side of the trade deadline. So, you know, while I do think that the sides have made progress, I'd be surprised if they announce an extension before the trade deadline, just because it could impact some of the moves that they might want to make in the meantime. It, you know, to me, it makes sense to come to an agreement before the 24th, shake hands on it, but don't file it until the 25th or after, just because it would put them in a better position, I think, to be active here before the deadline.
So Freddie Anderson returns last night, CJ, and outside of the first shot of the periods, he looked pretty good. How do you see his usage for the last 24 games of the regular season?
It's going to be compelling because he really hasn't been challenged too much during his years in Toronto, and frankly, his performance hasn't, you know, warranted a challenge. I mean, he's been very steady. He's been among the better goalies in the league since coming here, you know, more than 3 years ago. What's a different scenario this time around is we still don't know, you know, if he's feeling the effects of that injury that knocked him out of games, you know, if he's 100%. He did have a little different performance, I would say, in January and around Christmas time. That was actually, he was trending better until he suffered that injury. And now Jack Campbell's come in, and it's only three starts. So, I mean, I don't know that we can read too much into it, but he's got 5 or 6 points. I'll believe he's got 5 or 6 points in those games. And so, you know, I would think that they're in a position where they kind of have to ride the hot hand again. You know, we're not a goalie controversy or anything like that, but, you know, it's notable that Campbell gets a start tomorrow in Ottawa and Freddie Anderson goes Sunday in Buffalo, because I do think at some point, you know, this is going to be maybe a little bit more spread out. I mean, you know, Freddie's had a lot of the net since he's been a member of the Leafs. He's, you know, he's played, I think, more than any other goalie or certainly in the top two or three of goaltenders in the league in that time. You know, there's a chance that he's not going to be an automatic for every game the way he has been, especially depending on performance. And you know, I think that's healthy. You know, internal competition, you know, drives all kinds of athletes. It drives one more ice time, and defensemen the one more ice time. And, you know, I think what happens in the next 24 games is just on who's playing well and who's getting wins, because that's the only thing the Leafs really have to focus on to try to qualify for the playoffs.
So 10 days away from the deadline, throw a scenario, a trade that may shock anybody involving the Toronto Maple Leafs.
You see, I don't really see one. I mean, maybe I'll be shocked. I think that what's clear is their objective entering this deadline period was to try to address the blue line longer term, to bring in a younger cost control defenseman that helps them for now and helps them for later. I mean, if there's one hallmark, I would say, of this management group, is that most of the deals they make solve not just the immediate problem, but at least one other problem. That, you know, there's kind of a little wrinkles built in, you know, trying to get an extra 1 or 2% out of the deals. And that made a lot of sense to me. This isn't the sort of team, I don't think, typically that's in the rental market. You know, I don't know that there's a big home run swing coming, though. I really think that they believe in the team they've built. You know, they have the fifth best points percentage since Sheldon Keefe took over from Mike Babcock in the NHL in late November. And even though they're in a quote-unquote precarious position right now, I just don't see a remaking of this roster. I don't think any of the core four forwards are remotely in the conversation. You know, as I said, you know, one of those sort of middle-tier forwards might have been a trade chip, but even that is less clear now. So, you know, my feel is, and maybe I'll be shocked too, is that you're not going to see a scenario where there's a big surprise here. I really think that they're going to, you know, stick largely with the group they have, look to improve the blue line if they can, and hope that they get healthy enough and good enough goaltending to make a run into the playoffs.
CJ, that stunt Zach Cassian pulled in Tampa Bay last night on Eric Chernak, I mean, that is bloody dangerous. And it can result in serious injury or worse if that skate runs up Chernak's chest and into his neck area. Thankfully, it didn't. Cassian was not remorseful at all after the game. He waived his right to an in-person hearing today, so the league can suspend him anywhere from 6 games onward. The Oilers have 25 games left. Chris Simon got 30 games 12-plus years ago for stomping Jarkko Ruutu. Not long after that, Chris Pronger got 8 for stepping on Ryan Kesler. Where do you think we're going here? Is Cassian in the jackpot such that he could get the Oilers' final 25 games, Or are you like me and you think it's probably 10 to 15? I just went randomly with 12 games.
Yeah, I think it's maybe a little lighter than that. More on the 10 range. Pretty significant. I mean, look, Edmonton's already, without Connor McDavid, not going to quit. They're depleted a little bit at forward. They're in a playoff race. And it's going to be costly to Zach Cassian. He's going to lose approximately $24,000 in salary for every game that he gets dinged here. So, this is going to be penalized, I think, in what we'll consider a very harsh and correct fashion when it comes down. But, it's an indefensible act. I think that stands out, number one. I mean, what can he say? I heard what he told reporters last night, but I don't know that there's the video certainly doesn't back up his account of what went on. And, the fact that he was suspended, albeit for a different sort of act with Matthew Tkachuk, here in the last few weeks, isn't going to help his cause either. And obviously he's heard from player safety in years, gone by as well. So, all those things will stand to hurt him in this, matter. And I do think he's going to get a very severe punishment. And I think that's what's called upon. I mean, this is one of those ones that I don't really know, probably even if you're an Oilers fan, how you can make an argument. We exist also just at a time. I mean, it's coincidental, but I think that there's a heightened sensitivity to skate lacerations. You've had three players suffer very significant injuries by having their wrist cut this year by skates. Casey Cizikas actually suffered a not minor, but not as serious as it could have been injury with a skate cut this week. I think that this is an area the league also is sensitive to, and obviously you just can't kick someone with a skate on. I mean, there's at some point, there's almost no analysis needed, I think.
Yeah, just don't kick someone with your skate. That's not very difficult.
Right-thinking people would look at that and understand why that isn't good. And so, this will probably be the heaviest suspension I think George Parros has handed down during his time with player safety. I don't know if he goes to 25, but I certainly think double digits is probably the baseline of where it will start.
If the consequence is worse for the kid in Tampa, how different is the suspension, do you think?
It's different, and I know it's not supposed to be, but think how much more attention it's getting. And it's obviously getting eyeballs and attention today. I saw it bounce around social media last night, but, I don't want to imagine what that might look like, but we can, without filling in the details of what could have been, I mean, that would be all over everywhere. I mean, there'd be no choice at that point, I think. So, probably in some ways here, no matter what the number is, Cassian's lucky that it didn't end up worse. Obviously, we're happy for Eric Cernak, that for him, it was just something he could be frustrated by, but not have any further damage. And, let's hope that we don't see anything like it again for a long time.
How busy are you going to be next Monday, man?
It's going to be busy. There's going to be lots of bodies. I want to believe we're going to get a surprise somewhere, but I get the feeling we're not. I've asked a few people, and I get a lot of the names. You guys are on. You guys know who's getting moved, but, there'll be lots of trades and, hopefully enough to warrant getting up at 5 a.m. and coming into the studio.
The best part of trade deadline is when the team you're covering is on the West Coast and you're standing outside the
hotel.
You've
had that gig before, Raz. You were in San Jose 1 year, I think.
I had an Anaheim 1 year as well. It's, 3:45, you're up, 4:30.
And it's not just trade deadline, Arash. It was Los Angeles, Brad Richards, summer of 2012.
Sure.
John Tavares.
Yeah, I had a Leafs deadline out there in Marina Del Rey. And I remember that Chris, I'm Alex Kuhner, a camera guy. We're setting up on the boardwalk right by the water behind the Leafs Hotel. And the security came out and said, "What are you guys doing here?" And when we explained why we were there, who we were, what we were doing there, to explain to somebody in Los Angeles that we were going live at 4:45 in the morning to talk about hockey trades, he just turned around and walked away. He didn't know what to say to us. So
he didn't know what to do with that information.
Yes, and that was the Brian Boyle deadline for the Maple Leafs there in LA.
It's amazing how you never fight for the Columbus trips, Arash. You always seem to be in California.
Well, I did the Columbus for 10 days around the Rick Nash one, and the PTSD is just starting to wear off after that one. So
CJ, he wants to be in Columbus in June when his Jackets are playing in the Stanley Cup Final. That's the time of year to be there.
Oh, I'm going for the parade.
I've already, my man Kevin Hilliard and I were going to the parade down Nationwide Boulevard when, oh, who even knows who the player will be lifting the cup? The
winding
captain of the
around
team
to the
then.
Big horseshoe.
Yes.
And Conn Smythe winner Elvis Merzlikens will be in the first car.
Absolutely. CJ, appreciate the time, man. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, Chris Johnson there from Sportsnet.ca. He is going to be quite busy 10 days from now, NHL trade deadline day.
I think Kyle Dubas is going to do something.
You do, huh?
Well, he's got to do something because I look, it's a negotiation at this point whether this Leafs team is going to make the playoffs. There's nothing guaranteed. Thank God Florida lost last night. The Leafs still have a two-point lead on the Panthers, although Florida does have that one game in hand. I think they play two more times. The one thing the Leafs have in their advantage is the schedule. There's not a lot of the silly back-to-backs in the month of March where I think Florida has four or five. Mm-hmm. So from a schedule perspective, the Leafs, it kind of falls in line for them. The more people you talk to, Arash, on paper, they'd take the Leafs roster over the Panthers, but the way the Leafs have played so inconsistently this year, I mean, you're scoring five but giving up six. You're scoring one and giving up two. Sheldon Keefe, he was talking about it after the game last night. We ran it on leadoff on Sportsnet 590, the fan this morning. He's still trying to find that happy medium. He says, right. We're keeping the puck out of our net better, much better of late than we have been, but our offense has dried up. So they're still trying to put all facets of the game together here, some 60 games or close to into the season.
Winding down here on Tim and Sid, Arash Madani and Scott MacArthur with you until 7 o'clock. It's now time for What We Missed.
What we missed!
This was a wild one. Manchester City given a two-year Champions League ban and a 30 million euro fine for violating UEFA's financial fair play rules. Out of Champions League means you are out of relevance.
You're out of relevance. You're going to have trouble signing players or bringing players over in transfer. Pep Guardiola, the manager, is he going to stick around? Lots and lots of questions around Man City. But how about this? UEFA, about 10 years ago, fair play rules, financial fair play rules. You're not allowed to have more than a 45 million euro deficit.
And theirs?
180 million euros. But then when the ruling family of Abu Dhabi controls the team, you can cover those losses pretty significantly.
180. It was 10 years ago today.
Dots.
Yes. Alex Bilodeau won gold for Canada, the first Canadian to win a gold medal on home soil. It springboarded Canada at those games. It changed Vancouver 2010 forever. What was your favorite moment of Vancouver 2010?
Well, the Bilodeau moment, but also the involvement of his brother, Frederick, sure, who suffers from cerebral palsy and has been so resilient in his life. And then seeing Frederick again in Sochi in 2014 when Alex won a gold medal in moguls over in Russia. So that was a really cool story. But you know me, Arash. I'm a puck guy. Puck guy.
Is that what you are, Scott?
Sidney Crosby, the golden goal. Golden goal.
That's the number one for you.
Well, I mean, look, Sid at the time, we forget now, Sid the kid, I mean, he turns 33 this August. The young man at the time already had a Stanley Cup under his belt, a couple of Stanley Cup finals appearances. It was as crucial a moment for his Hall of Fame career as any that he's had.
It's been a lot of fun, Scotty.
Are we going to do this again? Are we going to get invited back?
That's a very good question that goes way above our pay grade.
We'll be invited back every Valentine's Day. Of course, next year's is on a Sunday, so we'll see if they remember us 2 years from now.
We'll wish Kirk Cousins a happy Valentine's Day from afar.
From our Twitter account.
We thank all of our guests here this evening. Alvin Williams from the All-Star Game in Chicago. Marley Rivera, who joined us from spring training. Chris Johnston. For Scott MacArthur, Arash Madani saying, so long from our Toronto studios. You've been watching and listening to Tim and Sid. The boys will be back next week. Enjoy your long weekend, everybody.